You all right over there?
A listener texted in and asked if we danced during the intro music. And you're like, I sometimes bob my head. And I like quickly read it. And then out of the corner of my eye noticed.
Saw me bobbing my head.
That you were like, but you were doing it like very self-consciously because he'd like made you think about what you were doing. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So
gotta,
good.
Gotta get a good head bob on over here in the studio. Get warmed up for the segment. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here. Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trust. Trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us, he is the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our pal Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. How are you guys?
We're doing very well here. So the Canucks, all of a sudden, they've won three in a row here. And what my take on last night's game was, I know it can be kind of confusing to make sense of this team right now and, you know, what do wins even mean in the bigger picture because they might trade a bunch of guys and all that. If I had to choose one thing that really mattered from last night's game, it was the performance of Thatcher Demko. Do you agree that that's the biggest takeaway for the short term, for the long term, for the Canucks from that game?
Yeah, I think so, because as you rightly point out, you know, we're living in the upside down right now in terms of what to expect from this group going forward, in terms of on-ice performance, in terms of who's going to even be on the team and what the future holds both in the short term and the long term. But for Demko to have that kind of game, and there are a couple of games now that he's had where he started to look like himself. He hasn't strung consecutive starts together where he's played at that level, but we've seen some flashes of the Thatcher Demko that we all know and the way he's capable of playing and the level that he played at last year that, you know, meant he was a Vezina runner-up. So, you know, that I think is a positive for him. I think it vindicated Rick Tocchet for the decision to start Demko after I know there was a lot of sort of criticism in the market and lots of people thought it would be crazy to start Demko in that game because of how well Lankanen's been playing. But Demko delivered with some key saves, especially right at the end when they were protecting the lead and, you know, were on their heels a little bit. And hopefully that could be a confidence-building performance for him moving forward. And I think it'll be most interesting to see when he gets the net back.
Batch, are Man United going to score on these Romanian farmers or what?
Probably not. I mean, their strikers don't score. They need their center backs to score. So
yeah, it's you know, ugly.
They're kind of like
not great. Right,
a lot of point shots is what you're saying from Man United.
It's a lot of low to high, and none of the top guys are going. Honestly, there are so many. Like we don't want to go down this rabbit hole because it's going to bore the listeners. But there are so many comparisons between Man United and the Canucks right now. Like a mercurial offensive star that isn't playing to the level that they want him to, that may be on the outs with the organization in Marcus Rashford. Sounds a lot like Elias Pettersson to me, like a team that's underperformed, that, you know, is struggling, that has a lot of short-term and long-term questions, that struggles to score goals. Yeah, there's you know, I feel sometimes like, you know, my fandom for Man United is often mirrored by what's happening with the Canucks. It's a strange sort of dynamic. And so we'll see how both of those things play out going forward.
That's how I feel about the Blue Jays often. Because it was, you know, like they had Vladdy and Bo Bichette like around the same time the Canucks had Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And then it's just been like, no, they can't figure it out. They can't get the group around them. Those guys aren't living up to it. And it's like, this is supposed to be my break from my job. But it's the same thing. It's the same storyline playing out.
Yeah, there is no break, is what I've learned.
So with Demko's performance, you know, by far his best of the season, I thought he stole the Canucks 2 points because I thought the team was otherwise mostly outplayed by the Predators last night, Batch. I mean, are we back to being in a zone where are we back?
Are we so back?
We are not back. But
yeah, well, this is honestly, like, we get these questions because on In the Booth, Randeep and I do a mailbag segment every week. And every week there's someone that's like, are we back or are we totally screwed?
Is it over?
Like it's both ends of that spectrum on a week to week basis, basically depending on whether they won or lost the game preceding when we record the podcast. So
the answer though, is we are back to being totally screwed. Patch, are we back to being in a zone where the Canucks really should be looking at, you know, giving Demko a run of games again, given his upside, given how important it is to have as much information as possible about where Demko's at in terms of his game, in terms of his durability, going into this offseason with Lankanen expiring and of course, Demko becoming extension eligible on July 1?
Yeah, see, I don't think that's the way they will look at it, because as much as, you know, we are focused on all these long-term, bigger-picture questions about the future of the organization, if they move on from core pieces, and, you know, if they trade Miller and or Pettersson, what does that mean in terms of Hughes' future, and, you know, would they move on from Demko as well, and all of these sorts of things? Like, within the organization, and especially within the coaching staff and in the dressing room, they're looking at the fact that they're back in a playoff spot, and they need to win games. So I think in the short term, even if the bigger picture might be more important, you know, they will make the decisions about who will start each game based on who they think can win them each game. That's how coaches operate. That's how goaltending coaches operate. That's how players operate. They don't really know any other way. And unless the Canucks had the bottom completely fall out and were in no way, shape, or form going to make the playoffs, would they then look at some of those longer term kind of aims and goals and questions? You know, that said, I think a hot Thatcher Demko playing well still represents this team's best opportunity to win games in the short term. So they'll have to balance that with the fact that Kevin Lankinen's played well, as long as they haven't played him too much. So he has given them a chance to win right now. And honestly, it's a good problem to have, where, you know, you're going into the game against the Stars tomorrow and you're saying, I could see them starting either guy and I wouldn't have a problem with either guy starting that game, you know, in terms of winning games. Now, in terms of the longer term, yes, you want to know what you have from Demko. You want to know about his durability. You want to know about where his ceiling and his floor are, so you can make a informed decision about, you know, whether you're going to extend him, whether you're going to extend Lankanen, how much money you're going to commit in the crease, whether you move on from either of those guys. But ultimately, you know, at least for the moment, they're going to worry about winning games. And, you know, hopefully their aims sort of align, where Demko gives them a chance to win games. They play Demko more. They learn more about his status and his situation, and that gives them the information they need to make some of the big decisions that will be coming in terms of their crease this summer.
When you think about what you saw last night, just generally from the Canucks, did you think they played well?
I thought they played well compared to how they have played this year.
Yes, they played hard.
I guess it depends where we set the bar of well. And
well, the bar batches, are fans pathetically sharing screenshots of the Canucks passing the Calgary frickin' Flames after 50 games? That's where the bar is. It's below the ground. We've buried it already.
So then they cleared the bar, clearly, because they won. But, you know, I've been thinking about this more so in relation to individual player performance than team performance, because, you know, a couple games ago, Vancouver wins, and there was all this talk about, like, oh, Miller scored a goal. Wasn't he great? And, man, Elias Pettersson had 7 shots. And I was like, we're crowning Elias Pettersson for getting 7 shots when this guy used to fill the net at will? Like, how far have the goalposts moved in terms of how we are rating these players and judging this team? And so I guess the answer is the goalposts have moved, the bar has dropped. But with all of that said, that looked more like the way the team played when they got wins last year. Even if, you know, they were outplayed at times in games, even if, you know, you could argue they weren't the better team throughout the game, although I thought they had some really good stretches and were deserving winners at the end of the night with a little bit of help from Demko as well. But yeah, so it's kind of, I don't really know how we're framing these sorts of questions. So they're hard to answer because, like, yeah, compared to, you know, the will they or won't they, you know, in and out performance of the last 2 months where they couldn't string 2 wins together, I thought it was a good road performance and, you know, a gutsy effort for them to pick up 2 points and get a win that they sorely needed to put themselves back in playoff positioning, even if only by total points as opposed to points percentage, as I know you would want me to mention, Drancer. But
that's tied. You know, it's tied.
Okay, so, but my point being that, like, I think these represent steps in the right direction, but I, you know, based on the fact this team was a game away from the Western Conference Final last year, based upon the fact that they themselves talked about raising the bar and setting standards higher coming into the year, I'm not willing to say they were tremendous or great or excellent or even good. They got the job done. They got the 2 points. There's still room for this group to improve, and I think we all know that.
Let's be real, though. Even the standard that you just said is low, right? Like, no one's raising an almost beat Edmonton banner as much as people have talked about it ad nauseum around this group.
No, but I think that almost beat Edmonton experience prepared people for what they hoped was a year where things would take another step in the right direction and this group would improve and they would get better results and maybe they would actually beat Edmonton or whoever it was in the second round this time around. And then you can get closer to talking about banners that you'd actually want to hang.
And then a city of Charlie Browns tried to kick the football again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, this is Canucks history, right? Like, you know, we're hearing a lot about learning about history and not being doomed to repeat it in terms of current events in the real world. I think it applies to the Vancouver Canucks as well, as certainly has been the case with the way things seem to have unraveled with their core group based on the events of the last week or so.
Well, and you know, your point about, look, it's a step in the right direction, but it's still well clear of the bar everyone was hoping this team was going to hit. I kind of feel like that evaluation of the team applies to Elias Pettersson's performance as an individual as well. You know, in the first period, it's like, okay, hey, he's making some plays. He's holding on to the puck. He's getting to the center of the ice a little bit more, maybe a little bit more juice in his legs. I don't know that it really continued for the rest of the game, but you know, okay, hey, you can look at it and say, well, that's a step in the right direction. Can he build off that? But if we're comparing it to the standard he had set earlier in his career and that earned him that deal, we all know that's nowhere close to the player that he can be. So in one sense, you can look at it and say, well, I hope that's a step in the right direction for him, but it's hard to get too excited about it either.
Well, yeah, because we've multiple times this year tried to convince ourselves that a good game from Pettersson meant that he was about to find it. And oh, here we go. We're about to see prime Petey again. He's trending in the right direction. And yet that has never materialized. So, like, again, talking about, you know, Charlie Brown kicking the football and Lucy pulling it away, like, that applies to individual players too. I think Pettersson's one of them. I think Miller at times has been one. I think, you know, talking about how great Thatcher Demko was last night, he could be another one in terms of finding consistency with his game. And in Demko's case, because of the injury, you know, there's not as much, you know, direct blame on the player in that scenario, because it's going to take him some time and he's going to have to work through things, and it's entirely possible that we don't see Thatcher Demko be the consistent Thatcher Demko of the past until maybe next season, as he gets a full summer of training and a full training camp and is able to ramp up through the preseason and all of those things that he didn't get to do this year. But yeah, you know, it's why I find the conversation around this team so hard to peg down right now, because in one sense, yes, they've won 3 in a row. They're playing better than they have for most of the last 2 or 3 months. On the other side of things, we're also talking about core players being moved because this team has massively underperformed and had reported off-ice rifts that have caused them to really struggle. So, you know, I guess it depends if you're a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of person, right? On the glass half full side, it was, oh, another positive step for Pettersson. Maybe he can find his game. On the glass half empty side, it's this guy's still on pace to not even hit 20 goals and 60 points after signing a deal that'll pay him $11.6 million per season.
Batch, I was thinking about some of what we've seen in previous seasons, and I don't really think there's a analogy between anything we've seen from this management group right now to what we've seen previously, but that 2022 deadline, right, where the team was bottom 5 in the league by point percentage at roughly this time, and Bo Horvat gets dealt at the very start of the All-Star break, February 1, roughly. So it's actually, I think it was January 30.
It was today. It was,
yeah. So it was exactly
it's the 2 year anniversary.
2 years.
Yeah. 2 year. Yeah.
The exact 2 year anniversary. So I guess it was 2023. So you get Horvat dealt and then they make the,
so who are they trading today? I guess we'll find out.
That's a good question. Good question.
Horvat dealt. They do the Hronik deal. They trade Luke Shen. They brought in Kravtsov. Like, between,
they oh had, man, they, I've forgotten about Kravtsov.
I know. You know what? It's amazing. I was doing this like deep dive on all my deadline coverage, basically, and just like trying to wrap my head around how I should approach the next 6 weeks. And like, man, some of the years that we've been through, you've like memory hold just how bad it was, and, or just how much happened. You know what I mean? Like, there was so much that happened. Tyler Motte got dealt that deadline.
Yeah.
Anyway. By the time it's done, like by this time in that season, they'd done basically nothing. And by the time it was done, like all of those five trades that happened, Kuzmenko was extended. You know, I mean, that's a lot of work that got done over a 5 week span. And I was thinking about it from the frame of, you know, like the Bachman Turner overdrive of it all. Like, we haven't seen anything yet. You know, as much as this season feels like it's been five, right? We there's still so much road to run.
There's 30-plus games and a Four Nations break and a trade deadline and all sorts of things.
And this team's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, my God. So, I mean, what – just, like, put on your best future forward hat. What do you expect? What do you expect? What is the thing you feel most confident about between now and the end of the year?
That is a right? hard question to answer because we are in a timeline where anything is possible, right? And I know, like, you know, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. But, like, if you tell me that JT Miller and Elias Pettersson are both gone, I believe it. If you tell me one of them's gone, I believe it. If you tell me they're both still here and someone and Brock Besser's gone instead, I believe that. I think probably Brock Besser being traded is at the top of my list of certainties before the deadline. You know, as much as we've heard all the noise around Pettersson and Miller, and one of those seems inevitable. You know, we correct me if I'm wrong, Jancer, you're probably working harder on this file than I am, but I don't know what sort of meaningful contract extension discussions have been made with Besser's camp. We're five weeks out from the deadline right now.
They have a good sense of the number, but things have been quiet for weeks. Last I checked,
they've been quiet for weeks, and this is a management group that gets their work done early. So if they aren't at least working diligently on that at this point, with a little over a month till the deadline, I think the decision has probably already been made. That's, you know, just my analysis and speculation. That's not with any sort of knowledge of the situation, but, you know, past behavior often informs future behavior. So I think Brock Besser is almost certainly gone by the deadline, just because, you know, they can't afford, you know, being a bubble playoff team at this point, you can't afford to hold on to that asset in the hopes that you go on a run, even if you have, you know, a tremendous run up and to the Four Nations face off and come out on the other side and play some really good hockey and start to make fans believe about your ability to be a contender again. I don't think you can afford to let an asset of that value die on the vine. So, you know, I think this management group will be aggressive. I think we will see numerous moves made prior to the deadline, you know, whether they are, you know, massive earth shattering franchise altering moves or whether those have to wait to the summer. I think we'll have to wait and see. But if I had to pick one thing, I think it's Besser probably being traded and not being a part of the Vancouver Canucks by the second week of March after the deadline.
Really strong answer. I think you're right.
Well done, Batch. We'll hold you to it. We'll hold your feet to the fire if it doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, we should probably hold Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin's feet to the fire if it doesn't happen, unless they sign an unless I'm completely
wow,
wrong.
Shirking responsibility. Classic Batch.
well,
I think we should blame somebody else. Oh, wow.
Well,
buddy.
Here's the other side of this, though. Here's the other side.
You got
of
a
this,
future
though.
In nope. hockey ops.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Always planning for my next career when I work in media. The other side of this is that none of us saw the JT Miller extension coming, and then they dropped it on us out of midair in August, right? It was a random August.
It was a Labor Day.
Suddenly,
yeah.
It was my anniversary.
Labor Day. It was like a Friday.
I think it was like the Friday before Labor Day.
Yeah, it was the Friday news dump. But, oh, by the way, we've extended JT Miller. So, like, could they drop a Brock Besser extension on us? Yes. Might they feel they have more flexibility to do that if they expect to move off of Miller or Pettersson? I think that is also possible. But based on the way things are going right now, I think, you know, the most likely of any moves is the one that's least being talked about right now, which is Besser moving on. And, you know, if you're moving on from Besser and you're moving on from one of Miller or Pettersson, then things are going to get really interesting because if, again, we use past behavior to inform future behavior, what did they do? They traded Horvat and then they used the assets and went out right away and got Hronek. So if they accrue a bunch of assets from, you know, trades of these core pieces, then it wouldn't surprise me if they turn around and are aggressive immediately before the deadline in using those assets to try and reshape the core group if they can.
Batch, great stuff, man. Really appreciate it. Good luck with Manchester United.
Thank you. It's a slog. It always is.
Absolutely.
But I appreciate it.
All right. That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. And we'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Sean Gentile from The Athletic, of course, based out of Pittsburgh. So I'm curious to get his perspective on the Rutherford bombshell interview this week, how it compares to what he saw from Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh. And talk about the Mika Rantanen deal, the fallout from that around the league, and a lot more. Next with Sean Gentile on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, we are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in now. We've got an open segment to finish the show, but right now joining us from The Athletic, covering the NHL, our pal Sean Gentile. Sean, what's going on, man?
Boys, how we doing? Transfer, glad to see you showed up today. You were absent last time.
I was.
Jamie by myself.
What happened? Was that the day that I got delayed in D.C.?
Couldn't tell you.
I think it was, right? A couple weeks ago?
I'm sure there was something.
Yeah.
Some sort of excuse like that, certainly.
Some sort of typical Drance excuse.
Yeah. So always slacking off. That's what everyone always says about me.
Just doesn't put in the work.
For years I've been saying it. This guy's a dog.
All right. So obviously you probably heard Jim Rutherford out there giving interviews, or giving one interview. Actually gave a couple. He talked to Ian McIntyre as well. So giving interviews, dropping bombs. And you covered, you had an up-close view of the Jim Rutherford experience when he was in Pittsburgh. How does this compare? Like, where does this last week rank on the Rutherford scale of wild stuff that you, from what you've seen?
No. one to 10 gyms. Rated on the scale
one to 10 gyms.
me and Sean McIndoe and Frankie Corrado talked about it yesterday on the Athletic Hockey Show. And I was trying, like, I was like kind of slow on the uptake. I didn't read the interview like right when it came out, so I didn't realize the extent of it until pretty much right before we recorded. We'll give that a solid 8.5 out of 10 gyms.
but there's room to grow here, is what you're saying, Sean. There's room to grow.
100%. You can't rule anything out with him. You have to allow for something truly transcendent and wild to really max out the scale. I think what really took it to the next level for me was when it seemed like he brought up Quinn like unprompted and was like, yeah, if we trade those guys, we're gonna have to trade him too. Like, what are we? What's going on here? Yeah, I was scrambling. I didn't realize he gave a. Look, man, like you guys said it, there's a long history of Jim doing that kind of stuff. You always got to be ready for it. But I was not expecting a new inductee into the Pantheon a couple of days ago. That was really good. It was high-end stuff from him.
There's been lots of debate locally, like, what does it mean? What was he trying to accomplish? All this stuff. But from a league-wide perspective, so not just, like, what it means for the Canucks, but in terms of what this means for the trade market and what you expect across the next 5 weeks, how do you sort of react to how this has shifted, what you expect to see from Vancouver over the next little bit here?
I, whenever he says that kind of stuff, I tend to believe him. Like, I tend to just assume as a baseline that he's telling the truth.
Yeah.
And I think once you establish that, it gets even crazier. I wouldn't rule out the fact, though, there's the possibility, because he's a crafty gentleman, always has been. Like, he knows what buttons to push. He certainly has tried to push plenty over the years. I wouldn't put it past him to try to use that as some kind of last ditch, you know, like effort to try to get those guys to get the car back on the road here, as just a true last chance effort. But man, I don't know. I don't know how open for business they were before, but man, that's whenever stuff's laid bare like that, I don't know how you can't feel like things have changed. Things have changed even more, and it's become even that much more likely. You know, ruling out the fact that it prompts some kind of 12th hour change of heart, and those two players end up changing their mind. I tend to think that was directed and important by him.
It does make me think that, like, one of Jim Rutherford's superpowers, I think, is just he's incredibly, incredibly fine with sitting in uncomfortable situations. You know what I mean? Like, I think back to even how the Bruce Boudreau situation ended here, and he wasn't in a hurry to speed that up. And, you know, now, like, you look at JT Miller answering questions in Nashville yesterday, and that's just from one Nashville reporter, not even, you know, before they're back in Vancouver. He's very uncomfortable, obviously. Yo,
but also understandably very zoomed in on his face.
So zoomed in. Oh, my gosh. Anyways, but it just seems like Rutherford, he's done this for so long. He's like, yeah, I don't care. I'll make things awkward. I'll make things uncomfortable, and everyone else is going to have to deal with it.
I think back to 2018 when he traded Carl Hagelin in like November, I want to say. It was really early on. It was the season after they won cups in 16 and 17, didn't the next year, and then started slow. And Jim traded Hagelin in whatever, a couple weeks into the season. And he did it like very openly because he was, because he wanted to, he thought the players were getting too comfortable, and you know, like he did it. It was, there was a level of, it was punitive. it was like, okay, you guys flamed out in the playoffs last year. You're starting slow. Everybody's getting too comfortable. Here, this will show you. And he traded Carl Hagelin, who was just like a beloved dude in that room. A really important part of the bottom six when they were, you know, winning Stanley Cups not long before that, and he traded him for Tanner Pearson for the Kings, and it was a total flop of a deal. Pearson did nearly nothing here, and Hagelin, you know, I think to some extent, like, the players were upset by that. They were upset by that. Like, it wasn't the right move, but he tried pushing a button on those guys just because that's how he's wired. And he had no problems moving a guy who was beloved by everybody else in the room, you know, to prove a point in the middle of November in a season. So I always think back to that when stuff like this happens with him. Like, yeah, you said it. He has no problem sitting in uncomfortable situations, and he has no problem making people uncomfortable if that's, you know, the kind of move that he deems necessary to be made.
Sean, put your Yenta cap on and play matchmaker here. If you were to find one team or finger point one team that you'd like to see JT Miller play for, you think it would be fun, you think it would raise their ceiling, which team would you spotlight?
I went on for like a half hour on the pod last week about how funny it would be if he ended up on the Hurricanes. And I realize now that I was just like, tempting some other bigger trade. Like, yeah. You sit there and try to will Miller to Carolina into existence, and then they go out and get get Mikkarin, and obviously, I don't know. I do think the Rangers would be funny in some regards. But I've said from the jump, I think from just a straight interest standpoint, I think it would be Dallas. It would be interesting to see him added to the mix there. They have some at least short term money to spend with Sagan on LTIR. So yeah, man, throw him in a group, especially one that needs maybe another quality body down the middle behind Rupa Hintz. I think that's kind of where I'm at. That's what I said last week. So I'll stick by that one. Miller to Dallas just for entertainment purposes.
His area game with Robertson, I think, would be fun. Like, I think that,
yeah.
I think that would rock beneath the hash marks.
They need some other guy there right now. Like, they still rely on, you know, Rupa Hintz to do a little bit too much heavy lifting too. So I think they have the group of players there to make that interesting at least. And I think close second place is probably New Jersey. We'll see how that goes now too, since Nico Hischier's out. I mean, I don't know how that changes the mix for them or whether it does at all. But I think those are the two big ones. Now the Carolina seems like they're out of the mix.
How do you think about the risk on Pettersson one way or the other? I mean, obviously he's been at we don't even have to say 60-point pace. He has less than 60 points across his last 77 regular season games across a calendar year. He had one goal in 13 games in the playoffs. So, you know, we've seen a year of underperformance at an $11.6 million cap number, which, look, that's a valid concern. On the other hand, we also know the history of, hey, that team traded an enormously talented, high pedigree player with a proven track record of extraordinary production in their mid-20s, and boy, did it go the way we all thought it would go. How do you weight sort of the scale of risk one way or the other on the Elias Pettersson file?
God, the no movement clause just makes stuff so complicated, man. Yep. That kicking in so soon. I mean, I can't even imagine how much you guys have talked about this topic over the last however long. So I know I'm not saying anything that's, you know, unique or all that insightful, but man, it would be so much easier if they could just, you know, if it really is over, you trade Miller, you keep Pettersson around, you see how he performs once the environment is a little bit more to his liking, clearly. And then you move on from there. But the no trade protection stuff, that just makes stuff, it makes it so complicated. The true part and the truism here is that it really is, man. It's so unlikely that moving him would result in anything good. Like the odds of that working out for the Canucks, regardless of a total lack of production going back to last spring and whatever. The track record and his age and just the general talent level, I think that would just win out and make me hold on to him, even though it's getting a little bit late and it's getting a little bit complicated. So I get both sides of it, but I would still hang on to him and feel pretty good about it.
We're talking to Sean Gentile from The Athletic here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. You mentioned the Mikko Rantanen deal. I mean, one of the biggest deals we've seen in season in the salary cap era in the NHL. For the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, they land Rantanen. In your eyes, how much does this change kind of the math for them as contenders in the East? Could you say they're favorites to come out of the East now?
It's tough for me to look at their goaltending, even though it's been a little bit better of late, and make them the 1A, you know, gold star favorite to come out of that conference. Like, I just don't think I trust Kachetkov or Freddie Anderson or whatever the combo there might be quite enough to make them the bold type favorite to come out. But man, what do they need? We have said it about them for years. Like, the three of us have said it for years. Like, the Carolina Hurricanes have needed forever, like, some other legit game breaker. And good as Martin Natchez has been the past few months, man, I think you do that trade 100 times out of 100. Mikko Rantanen is a great player, for any team. And he's also the exact kind of player that the Carolina Hurricanes need and have lacked as they've kind of fallen short over the last couple of years. So, man, I love what that does for the mix there. I think it makes their top six make perfect sense. But like I said, the goaltending I'm still kind of fuzzy on, and that's kind of what gives me pause. But, man, in terms of quality of player and overall fit, I don't think you could have done any better than they did, clearly.
From the Colorado perspective, I mean, do you expect them to make another move before the deadline now at this point? You know, it's hard to kind of see them not viewing themselves as Stanley Cup contenders. I know where they are in the standings and all that, and they haven't necessarily looked like that, but they still have MacKinnon and Makar. What do you expect to see from the Avalanche after this deal?
You got to figure we're going to see something because you know that they know that they can win with those guys.
Yeah.
And so do we. Like, you're only going to get so many bites at the apple. Like I don't want to sit here and make it sound like MacKinnon, Makar are washed up or whatever. These are still very young dudes, late 20s, mid 20s. Like, it's all good. Like they're going to have more chances. But also, like, every opportunity is important. And if you go into the playoffs and you know you haven't done the absolute most to maximize those opportunities, I'd be stunned. And Jim, more generally, I don't know how, if you're a GM that has that collection of talent and has those two guys at the top of your lineup, I don't know how you look in the mirror if you don't at least believe that you're maximizing their chance, you know, year in, year out. So yeah, I would assume that something else is on the way. They're not gonna keep all their money. I don't think we're gonna see Colorado enter the postseason with you know, not spending to the salary cap. That's for sure.
Sean, when I think about what to expect here, right, between now and when the Stanley Cup is awarded, I do have a feeling that this year is a little bit less wide open than certainly last year. Last year, ultimately, the cream rose to the top, but midseason, especially, I think, because of the Oilers' struggles and because we were discounting the Panthers because it was like, man, they played so much hockey, you know? I feel like we had this sense that it was wide open that was actually a false sense, and so maybe this could also be a false sense, but it does feel like between the Hurricanes, the Panthers, the Oilers, right? And then the Hurricanes obviously have the problem of the Devils and the Caps in their own conference. And then, you know, I'd throw in Colorado and Winnipeg. I think there's kind of like a tier of five or six, and there's a fair bit of distance between them and everyone else. Do you feel that way as we approach the deadline?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you mentioned Dallas. I would put Dallas in that mix for the overall team.
Once they add a right-handed defenseman who I have a little more time for, I'll agree with you. But I need to see it first.
I mean, what the Stars need to add a right-handed. What else is new? I've been on the shopping list for 5 years at this point. So whatever. Depending on how you feel about them, I feel the exact same way. I think, like, once you get outside, you know, say 6.5 or 7 teams at the top, stuff gets really, really mushy, really, really fast. And as someone who has to do power rankings every week, like, it's truly like, I don't know, like, how am I supposed to differentiate between, you know, the Kings and the Bruins or like, really, like, there's a group of 10 teams in the middle of the league right now that, depending on how stuff looks in a given week, like, it's a roll of the dice. Totally. I totally agree with you. I think there's a group up top that's pretty evenly matched, but once you get outside that, I think there's a whole lot of mediocrity, and even more than we've seen in past years.
Sean, really appreciate the time as always, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, boys. Talk to you soon.
That is Sean Gentile from The Athletic weighing in, giving it an 8.5 gems out of 10, the Gary Mason interview that Jim Rutherford conducted this week, which, by the way, the second half dropped from Gary Mason yesterday, which was hilarious. He was like, oh, by the way, I got all these other quotes from Jim Rutherford. Now, these not necessarily as juicy as the ones directly concerning the Pettersson-Miller rift and that situation and what they might do going forward. But still some interesting things I thought to dig into. And especially the commentary on Elias Pettersson specifically from Jim Rutherford, I thought was really, really interesting. You know, he says, look, I warned him before he signed that deal that this is going to make things more difficult. It's going to get harder. There's going to be higher expectations, not just for your production, but how you prepare, how you handle yourselves, how hard you work, all of those things. And, you know, Rutherford says, look, I don't think he got that. Certainly when he signed the contract coming into this season, but now he gets it. And Rutherford's saying he's got a lot of talent and he's going to figure it out. And I think that's is it too strong to call that a vote of confidence? Maybe, because you're also saying, well, he didn't understand it before, even though I warned him. But I think it doesn't take a lot of reading between the lines to look at that and say, Jim Rutherford's pretty confident in the future of Elias Pettersson as a player. Yeah. And I think in light of we almost traded him to Carolina, that's very interesting.
It is very interesting. And you know, I think part and parcel with the fact that this team's preference has been to trade JT Miller, but it's way more complicated to do and you get way less back. And yeah, as a result, I think they've explored their options. It'll be fascinating to see exactly how this plays out in terms of how much that matters. Like, how much does that actually mean in terms of guiding Vancouver Canucks decision-making? Hey, maybe he was just immature, but we see some progress. Have you seen enough progress?
Yeah.
And this is sort of why I talked about sequencing earlier this week. This is part of it for me, right? Set the expectations. Like, put him on a PIP. Very seriously. You need to be available after every game. I want to see you spin. I want to see you be positive and upbeat about our team's performance. You can be honest, but you also need to be supportive of your teammates. You need to be there after every loss, wearing it, being a leader, right? We want to see this sort of stuff. We want to see you be the first guy out on the ice, last guy off. We want to see you skate every game day, or not every game day, whatever works for you, but be around, be focused, be engaged. Lead by example a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? I mean, what's the harm of challenging a guy to do that for 32 games and making your decision after the season? Especially because we've seen his value is going to hold. He's not going to have less value at the draft than he has today.
Yeah, the only concern for me, that's what I would do as well, is try to trade Miller soon, use that the remainder of the season to gather information about Pettersson. It's just hard. Like, it's not like this guy just came into the league. How many games has he played? 500?
No, I'm not absolving him.
No, I know. So it's just, he shapes up and flies right for 30 games to finish the season. That's good. How much faith are you really going to have that it's going to look that way for the remaining 7 years of the contract? I'm not even saying it won't look that way. I'm just, if you're, as Gentile said, that no move clause kicking in makes things so complicated because you really got to make the decision all over again, the commitment decision all over again. The information you can gather between now and the end of the season, it matters, it counts, but you always have to view it in light of what's come before as well. So it's a tough one. It's a very, very difficult one. I agree ultimately that that's the path you take and you give him the opportunity to step up. You know, we've heard he's told the team, oh, I want to be here in Vancouver. Well, here's an opportunity. You know, actions speak louder than words. Don't just tell us, show us that you want to be here in Vancouver, because staying in Vancouver, it's not just, oh, okay, you're going to stay here and you're going to get paid a lot of money to play hockey. Like, the whole theory of it is you're one of our best players. That's what we're paying you to be. We're paying you to be a leader. We're paying you to be a face of the franchise, not the face of the franchise. That's Quinn Hughes, but you're next in line. So if you want to stay here, that's great, but that's part of the package that comes with staying here. And give him the chance. Give him the chance to step up and show that he wants to be a part of it. But, man, it's still an extraordinarily complicated decision and a lot of risk either way, I think, for the Canucks as well. The other thing from the Jim Rutherford part two interview with Gary Mason that I know a lot of people have picked up on was his commentary about the Nikita Zadorov free agency negotiations. And, you know, the thing that stuck out the most was Jim Rutherford saying he was mystified by Zadorov saying that he felt disrespected in the process. And he kind of lays out this, well, he asked for $5 million, so we gave him $5 million. He told Talk he wanted 6 years, so we gave him 6 years. Then he goes and signs that exact same deal with Boston. I can imagine a situation where both versions are true.
Thanks for the leverage.
Yeah, like if he felt disrespected early in the process, Zadorov, but then he was like, okay, but then I'm going to use him for leverage. You know what I mean? That both of those stories can be true.
It's easy to forget because of what he did in the playoffs, but Zadorov didn't exactly land smoothly in Vancouver.
Nope.
And by the way, I think that was both behind the scenes and in terms of his on-ice performance. Now, I think things changed for him because he's a sick personality who made it work and became a really crucial part of this team. Won trust from Rick Tocchet, won respect from teammates, and it was sort of hunky-dory. And I think entering the offseason, in fact, he'd gotten all the way to the point of wanting to return. That was my understanding at the time. Now, I was reviewing, as I said, my previous deadline coverage. And when at the outset of deadline season last year, like Zadorov was on the block, or at least rumored to be. There was absolutely an open mind about whether or not he was the right fit, having done the thanks for helping us hold the fort in Carson Soucy's absence thing. Now, we all know how it played out, but you know, I think there was some baggage going into talks, and then I think fundamentally, as the process unfolded, it became not about the money. And by the way, that was true for Elias Lindholm, too. They got uncomfortable to try and keep Elias Lindholm. It wasn't about the money, I think, for either player. And I do sort of wonder if being acquired and then finding yourself in trade rumors relatively quickly played a role in that. I think it did.
Yep.
I think it did. I'm not reporting that it did, but I think it did.
Yeah, that's fair. And anyways, I think
How could it not? Right? How could it not?
Yeah, although then why, like, don't you think that fades, though? And he's out here saying, oh, it was the best experience of my career, best 6 months or whatever. So doesn't that fade a little bit?
It does, but, you know, not when you're deciding where to spend the next 6 years of your career.
See, I read it more as that was water under the bridge. He was willing to move past it. But then early in the negotiation process, he felt disrespected.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And maybe it was a lowball offer or whatever, not in the ballpark. And from that point, he was like, okay, they're not serious. I'm looking elsewhere.
But that's where they were at with everybody, right? Like, I mean, Dakota Joshua and Tyler Myers had to basically wait until they knew what the score was on Lindholm and Zadorov. You know what I mean? I mean, they had so many guys to sign, right? Like, Teddy Bluger. Teddy Bluger. Talks heated up with Teddy Bluger once they realized they were out on Lindholm. Mm-hmm. It waited until that moment. You know, did they disrespect Teddy Bluger? No, they were weighing priorities and they had an awful lot of balls in the air. I mean, anyway, I understand it, but also
that's life.
That's life, and that's negotiations.
That's NHL free agency.
There's no good guys. There's no villains. It's hard to recruit these guys. It's tricky to retain these guys, especially once they have leverage. That's why, you know, we always amplify the story. The story gets bigger and bigger the closer you get to the deadline, for good reason.
Okay, we'll take a break here on Canucks Talk. We got an open segment to wrap up the show. You had a good piece up at The Athletic looking at trade tiers, which is a hilarious topic to be diving into right now with the Canucks. But I do think there's some interesting situations beyond the big headliners of Pettersson and Miller to get into. So we can dive into that. We can read some text from the inbox. Final segment coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
One to ten gyms.
We'll give that a solid 8.5 out of 10 gyms.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintec Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. So we were talking in the first segment about the win in Nashville last night and kind of how we should be evaluating, how we should be thinking about not just this three-game winning streak, but kind of the relevance of wins and losses in either direction right now for this Canucks team, given the larger conversation around Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. And I do think another one that we didn't really touch on, but another way to think about this is how what they do between now and the deadline changes what they do between now and the deadline, not on Elias Pettersson and JT Miller, but how it approaches some of the other decisions that they might want to make. And, you know, number one on that list, I think we've talked about it a fair amount, we got into a batch a little bit, Brock Besser. Obviously, they'll have to make a decision there. But, you know, you published one of your annual exercises at The Athletic right today, which is the trade tiers. So everything from the untouchables to the, you know, on the block players to the, what is it, franchise altering decision tier with Elias Pettersson in it. And, you know, there you get down into the weeds. And if this goes one way or another before the deadline, there are a bunch of pretty interesting decisions that they might have to make before March 7th.
There are, usually a team's posture is more well-defined at this point.
Yes.
Right. So usually it's like your buyers and, you know, there's maybe one guy you set off to the side for like, hey, they might move this guy to reallocate their cap better. But for the most part, the team is settled. I mean, we had Quinn Hughes, Philip Hronek, DeBrusk, Garland, Joshua Myers, Susie, Bluger, and Sherwood as guys we felt pretty comfortable placing in a not moving tier. That's a pretty thin list.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Demko and Lankinen, I don't think either are moving before the deadline. In-season goalie trades are rarer and rarer in that, I mean, you see like Blackwoods and like some teams do address it, but deadline acquisition of goaltenders, it just doesn't usually work out for teams.
It feels like a more early season thing where you give them some runway exactly to acclimate. Yeah.
And then there's everything else is excruciating. I mean, Nils Höglander has struggled. I think he's actually had a really good month, I would say. Like, I thought Nils Höglander took some steps in January to get back to being the guy we're used to seeing. But the production hasn't been there. His role is just expanding again, but it's not like it's been on the up and up all season long. We've seen sort of in fits and starts. He's played in the top six. He's been back on the fourth line. He's been a healthy scratch. Obviously, he hasn't scored a ton. 4 goals and 11 points in 46 games for Höglander. He's got a $3.3 million extension kicking in after the season. I mean, There's some risk that the team is going to have to navigate, think about, consider in sort of deciding where his future lies. And look, you know, people say stuff a lot like the best moves are ones you don't make, right? Sometimes the best moves are the ones you don't make. And that is true. Like, one thing that I think this management group nailed, frankly, was not panic trading Garland and Besser when there was a fair bit of incentive to do so.
They stuck to their guns.
Yeah.
Because they could have moved them. It just would have been for, you know, they would have had to retain a lot or attach a sweetener or something. Like, there were ways out of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It just would have been painful.
I mean, even if Besser does move ahead of the deadline, they'll get more from now than they would have when he was a distressed asset.
Yep.
Like, both players were too good to be distressed assets. And yet, there was that time where, I mean, I'm sure you remember the show where I was like, I'm pretty confident that Besser and Garland are better than Andrei Kuzmenko. And it was like a massive hot take, you know? But they're good players. Clearly, we've seen that. So Nils Höglander, you know, is he a guy you've got to hold? Or is this a situation where, hey, maybe you've missed trading Höglander for at apex value?
Yep.
And now it's just about avoiding a liability. Is that something they think about ahead of the deadline?
See, Höglander to me feels like a hold, especially given the uncertainty around your roster and what it's going to look like next year. You have a lot, like, you know, if you're trading Besser, for example, not that you immediately, like, Höglander hasn't done anything to earn those kind of consistent minutes at the top of your lineup, and who knows if Rick Tocchet is ever going to give those to you, but, like, you might have some spots to fill.
Right.
In your lineup, in your top six next year. Why trade him? Like, is his value going to go down? You know what I mean? Like, at worst case scenario, he's got less, fewer years left on his deal this time next year, looking into the future. So I don't know that his value has a lot of room to decline much further. And considering that, you might need some guys with, I don't, like, do we still think of him as a young player with upside? I guess. But you might need some of those guys around next year, depending on some of the other deals you make. He feels like a hold, unless there's another team out there that's really, really high on him still and kind of blows you away.
Well, there
offer.
Are. There, first of all, there are.
But, and then the next part of that, that also steps up and makes a really good, like a compelling offer, like an offer as if he's not distressed right now, which who's going to do that?
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Nils Höglander's game. I think he's a hold too, but I can see the argument either way, frankly. You know, at the end of the day, I'm pretty confident that he's like a complimentary middle six winger. And whenever those guys are valued highly, I don't think you should hesitate to move on from them because, you know, as we see with like Kiefer Sherwood, like that's a replaceable role
yeah.
at the end of the day. So if a team sees them as, but does anyone see Höglander that way now?
That's the thing,
right? Like,
is anyone willing to pay the price right now?
Yeah.
Whereas if he has a hot half a season to start next year, does that change all of a sudden? And could you be in a position to help him have a hot half a season to start next year? So I think that's a hold. One of the really interesting ones to me is a favorite on this show, Pugh Suter, who is, of course, an unrestricted free agent. And this is also where it's not like, I don't think it's as simple as, you know, if they're in a playoff spot, then you buy or you hold. And if they're not, then they sell, because you also have to be evaluating your likelihood. You know, how's Thatcher Demko doing? Does that give you more of a shot to actually do something in the playoffs? Have you sold Miller already? What did you get back for Miller? Have you sold both of them? There's all these other things that go into it. If you were in a clear selling mode, Pugh Suter might be one of your most attractive assets to deal out there. And typically, you know, say, well, hey, if you're not a lock to make the playoffs, a guy like Pugh Suter, you're not sure if you're going to be able to sign him, go ahead and trade him away. But if you have any designs on doing anything in the playoffs, and especially if you're talking about potentially trading a center like Miller and not getting a clear-cut number two center back, potentially, you need all the depth at center you can get. And that sets up the Pugh Suter conversation to be really interesting ahead of the deadline as well.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think Pugh Suter is a guy you should look to sign, especially given where this team's at with their two star centermen. But the problem with a guy like Pugh Suter is, what's he getting you at the deadline?
What do you think? Like a third round pick?
Maybe a second? Like, what?
I think you could get a second if teams buy him as a center. But yeah, maybe like two thirds, something like that.
Does that move the needle enough for this team given their priorities? That's my question. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying it should or shouldn't. I'm just, does it from their perspective?
Well, and then there's the other conversation with the likelihood of re-signing him. And I have no, like, have there been conversations? I haven't heard it.
Well, Pugh Suter, like, I'm sure there will be ahead of the deadline, because I'm sure they'll want to know. But my guess would be that this management group wouldn't view Pugh Suter as like an irreplaceable piece. It would be more like how the Tyler Motte situation played out. Right? Like a guy they have to, the sort of player that you have to count on yourself to replenish if need be.
Yep.
You know? So,
I mean, even you think of what they signed him in August, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So even then, it wasn't like he was a, you know, July 1 priority for them. We got to go out and get this guy. It was, oh, he's still available. Let's bring him in. He's played really well for you, but that probably tells you a bit about how they see that type of player and that they think they can go out and add another one at some point.
Yeah. Look, there's lots of teams that should, like, I mean, the Avalanche need a center. Pugh Suter, to me, is the sort of guy that they should be shopping for. You know what I mean? Like, if you were able to reallocate.
Don't you think they're looking probably higher end than that, though?
Well, maybe, but I'm just saying maybe they shouldn't be. I mean, you've got Drury, you've got, who else did they get back in that trade? They got Natchez.
Yep.
Maybe they like Natchez as a winger better. But you've got Natchez, you've got Drury, you've got Ross Colton, you've got McKinnon. You add just another option into the mix and reallocate Casey Mittelstadt into your defense, or bring in another talented guy. I mean, that to me would make some sense potentially. So, I mean, look, there's lots of teams that can use a guy who can play literally anywhere in the lineup and just raise the floor of your middle six across the board.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious to see what it sort of looks like. We also included Forbert and Juulsen. You know, those guys are guys that go for like a fourth every deadline. You see, that's like the classic deadline trade.
Yes. Depth defenseman for a mid-round pick.
Yeah, Jordy Benn to the Jets for a fifth. Mm-hmm. Troy Stetcher to the Oilers for a sixth. Like, you know, and I think one thing to consider here too is, how much data does this team want? on Archdeep Baines, Linus Karlsson, Max Sasson, Atu Ratu, Jonathan Lekaramäki. You know, how much data do they want? In thinking about the keep Quinn Hughes plan, the Hail Mary to keep Quinn Hughes, right? What's more valuable ultimately? Making the playoffs this year or gathering information so that you can make not like more than make the playoffs a year from now, right?
Yeah, although also, I mean,
they both matter.
Because if you can have it both ways, right? You know, you get Atu Ratu some playoff games. Like, that's really good intel that you're gathering.
100%. Or get him some games down the stretch in games that matter.
Yeah.
Is he ready for that? Right? Like, can you make the playoffs if some of Pew Suter's minutes become Atu Ratu's minutes?
Yeah.
Like, that's, you know, something you have to wait. On defense, right? Like, Vinny Desharnais and Danton Heinen, if there's a market tier in our article. You know, I think the Canucks have been open-minded about listening on both guys for a long time.
Well, we've certainly heard, I think it was like November, December, it was they're shopping Desharnais.
Yeah. So I, you know, I think those haven't worked out exactly the way they wanted. Those guys have term, you know, if you're hesitating about, you know, Atu Ratu filling Pew Suter's minutes, do you hesitate the same way if the question's Danton Heinen? Although Heinen had a really good first period yesterday, by the way, I thought that was the best he's looked in months. Anyway, point being, on when it comes to like Desharnais, you know, people hated seeing Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, scratch.
Yeah.
Do you want to blood Elias Pettersson? Would it be useful, beneficial to this team, especially given that they're actually in like a relatively high stakes playoff race, for Elias Pettersson to be playing game 21 of his career on opening night next season? Right? Tom Volander, when his season's up.
Even a guy like Cole McWard in Abbotsford.
Right. Is it going to be beneficial for this team to be able to look at those guys and be like, okay, well, they've played 5-6 NHL games. We have a sense of who they are. There's still a learning curve here. They might not be full-time NHLers. We're going to need to bring in some competition and insulate sort of how much we're relying on them, but there's an upside case that they could help us. I think realistically, finding a way to hang around while also carving out minutes for younger players, I think is a healthy way for this team to approach a season that has unfolded in a dysfunctional way at the NHL level. I think there's healthy outcomes here. Like, I think there's an outcome where the Canucks are able to rejig what they've got. You're not going to win the trade on paper, but you can clear cap flexibility and open up avenues to improve, you know, but both with the assets you're able to mine in like a Miller and Besser deal, right? And in terms of the cap space you're then able to open up, right? I don't know how deep it goes, but you know, you get some stuff for those guys and you turn around and you buy a puck moving defenseman and, you know, a center of some kind or a depth forward of some kind, and you're playing younger guys. I still think there's a path to the playoffs if the club does this, first of all.
Yep.
Especially if they get good goaltending and are able to bring it every night effort-wise. And, you know, I think there's sort of, you're able to do that. You're able to pivot. You go into the offseason with a ton of flexibility. You're going to have to, you know, be card counters in free agency the way that this club has occasionally been able to do, or they nailed in the offseason of 2023 and did well in the offseason of 2024 with a couple misses. Relatively low yield, low risk misses, but nonetheless, misses, right? And, you know, at least go into next season with a group, like with a young core, a younger depth group that has at least been tested.
Feeling like you have some options.
Yeah, feeling like you have some options.
And the Ratu one seems pretty significant there, especially considering, you know, at first you're hearing, oh, they really need a center back, right? And now it's like, well, we might not be getting a center back, or it might just be a bottom six type, and we might have to look around for other assets. And, you know, not that I'm saying, like, okay, you play Ratu down the stretch here, and, you know, I know he's on fire right now for the Abbotsford Canucks. I don't think he's all of a sudden ready to step in and be a third-line center on a regular basis for a contending team, for a playoff team even, necessarily, given what we've seen from him, you know, on balance in his NHL career. But is he at least just another reliable option for you? Can he lock down the fourth line center position to give you more flexibility up and down the lineup? Because I think, you know, some of the other names, like Lekaramäki, he's also lighting it up at the AHL level, as we've seen consistently from him this year. It feels like he's got a very, very good chance of having an everyday NHL role next year, especially once we start talking about, like, Besser might not be back and they might be doing a little bit of a pivot or a little bit of a retool. I don't want to say Lekkomäki's a lock or anything like that, but all of the traits that he brings that they lack, his upside, his production at the AHL, I think he's had good moments at the NHL level. Like, he looks like a guy who's going to be in the NHL plans. I don't know if there's anyone else that's, like, clear cut when you look at it and say, well, that guy's definitely going to be in their NHL plans. Ratu might have the best chance and might have kind of the highest upside from a team level perspective if all of a sudden you've got a center, just an, and I'm not even saying like a really good third line center or anything like that, just an NHL level center that you feel good about playing every day.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is at least what we've seen in the NHL level at center, Atu Ratu's actually managed decent defensive results, but nothing happens when he's on the ice, which makes him a fourth line center. But if he's your fourth line center, then you're playing Teddy Bluger and him in your bottom six, and all of a sudden you're getting nothing.
You're getting nothing offensively from your two bottom six centers.
Which is not acceptable in a world where you're downgrading from JT Miller. You know what I mean? Like, especially in a world, first of all, it's not enough even if Pettersson and Miller are your centers, but it's especially not if it's like Pettersson and X guy.
Well, especially not if you are, because maybe it would work if, you know, you still had Connor Garland in that third line winger role, right? And it's like, okay, he's the guy driving the offense on that line and we know he can do it, and Teddy Bluger takes care of the defensive responsibilities, but you'll still get production from that third line. If you're bumping Connor Garland up and, you know, now he's supporting your second line center, right? Like Jesperi Kotkaniemi or something like that, that you brought in a Miller trade. Well, then you've just opened up that hole in the third line. Now, having said that, I mean, they're not going to have a perfect roster coming out of this if you do, in fact, trade JT Miller. This is what we're talking about. You're going to lose the trade. There's going to be holes. You're going to have to make some tough decisions. But I think you're right. That kind of best case scenario is, can you figure out a way to kind of have it both ways? Have your cake and eat it too. Make some of these deals. Hang around the playoff race because the competition isn't all that strong, and gather some information about these young players, and then at least you put yourself in a better position for the extremely difficult pivot coming up in the summer, which feels like it's coming.
Yeah, and it's not an impossible pivot.
It's difficult.
It's difficult, but it's not an impossible pivot, especially because there is still value contained on the NHL roster.
Yes.
Right? And that's, it's just about making the right choices and prioritizing accordingly. And then whatever you build, it needs to function better. It needs to be more than the sum of its parts in a way that this group hasn't been able to be, right? And last season's was, you know, and then obviously a lot of this dovetails too with like Tockett's future and what decisions he decides to make. And obviously that's all interconnected. And tricky, right? I mean, I'm not trying to minimize how complicated this is. But I do think there's paths forward that are credible. And I think as we analyze them, like, yeah, this team's going to get worse from a true talent basis without the likes of Miller, maybe Pettersson, et cetera, on the roster.
Besser.
Those guys don't have 40 points this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, don't. This team is tied after 50 games with Calgary. You know, like, don't oversell what they've got. Right? In terms of what a pivot should look like and needs to look like, right? That you don't need to build a Stanley Cup contender next year, but you need to make progress and show certainly Hughes and his camp the level of competence that would make them comfortable signing up long term, firm in the belief that Hughes will get a chance to play in big games and win a Stanley Cup down the line.
I think that idea of at least building something that's more than the sum of its parts, that's a huge thing. Yeah. Like that, and even just from the perspective of convincing Quinn Hughes, right? Being able to say, like, hey, look how this group works together now. Now you can really picture it. Oh, if we just go out and add that finishing piece, all of a sudden, you know, you add that to what we have and we're going to take a big step forward. That idea of just making sure the parts fit, making sure there's that off-ice chemistry, but on-ice chemistry, more importantly, as well, is so important for this next step of team building, this team building phase that the team appears to be headed for.
Yeah. Get back to having fun.
Yeah.
You know?
That would be nice. That would make a big difference.
It really would.
That's what Tockett said the other day.
I know.
Go out there and have fun. Like, work hard, but you can have fun while you're working hard as well. That does it for us today. We are back tomorrow.
You're working hard at playing a game. You better have fun.
You should.
Yeah, it's
amazing. Certainly should. All right, we'll be back tomorrow for the Friday edition of the show. Final one of the week here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
And then a city of Charlie Browns tried to kick the football again.
There's no better emotional outlet than kicking a football.